Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I'm Jamil Graham. I'm your host, and Alchemy of Light is a celebration and exploration of consciousness. And today we are welcoming back Ukumbwa Sauti for part two of this January series to get us on the right track and making changes in a positive light for the new year to prepare for the better changes of this amazing world we are creating, of all of us working together. And I am very, very grateful to welcome Ukumbwa back. He has been an amazing gift in my life. I have learned so much since I met him a month ago. And today we will focus on world care. Part one, we focused on self-care, and today we focus on world care, balancing fire and water. So welcome, Ukumbwa. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thank you so much for that kind welcome, and very humbled by your words. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. And great to be back with you and to all your listeners. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's just go. We have we've had the great opportunity this month to actually work together behind the scenes. So we are ready. And welcome all the listeners. And let's begin, Ukumbwa.
Yes. That sounds good. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, last time about the personal care. And I guess I just wanted to touch base on that again. And remind people about ultimately the real responsibility that we all have in making sure that we are all okay. And you know, when we talked about the five elements, you know, two weeks ago, about the five cosmological elements in the Dogra cosmology, those were all again energies that are part of all of us that also live external to us, but that are a part of us, that all need tending, that all need reverence and reciprocity, understanding, and awareness in the sense of, you know, really being aware of how we are doing at any given point or how we are coming across and what parts of ourselves need tending or need care at any given point. So it actually is, excuse me, a perfect, you know, way of coming back into this to talk about world care, because these elements do not only live inside of us, but they live external to us. And that's how we find the resonance and the healing, actually, you know, through ritual and other ways. But to actually enact the positive things outside of ourselves that need to be done in this world, as you were saying, you know, the world that we're creating is dependent upon this kind of awareness. And the responsibility that comes to us to say, oh my goodness, you know, there is something happening outside of me. I do feel it inside of me. I do feel the imbalance. I do feel the tension, the stress, or I do feel the love and I need to magnify that love. I do feel the healing and I need to magnify and hold and spread that healing. So the personal care is the integrated, beautiful, you know, transition into talking about world care.
Thank you very much for that. In the conversation last, we talked specifically about the elements and how they related to us personally and how they reflected in the world. And would you like to just briefly summarize them again for us to move us into the world care conversation?
Yeah, then very quickly, you know, we'll mention that the first, you know, and very powerful element is the element of fire or voon in the Dogra language. Again, that element is the portal to the ancestors and the element of dreams and initiation, leadership, instinct, things like that, passion. The second element is water, or Quan, and that element is about peace and reconciliation and unity, healing, grief, balance and focus, and a number of other things. But as you were talking about, and in the newsletter talking about this balance between fire and water, you know, we'll definitely come back to that in a bit. But in the Dogra cosmology, those were the first two elements that had been created and that showed themselves in the universe. The third being Earth, which came out of the union between fire and water. And Earth is the element, or Timbalu in its female orientation, and Tingan in the male or masculine orientation, is the element of grounding and centering of identity. You know, we become who we are because of our relationship with land and these spiritual entities, which is why it's really important to understand the dynamic of being American, if you will. You know, when we say that term American, we're generally talking about people of European descent who have been transplanted or who have come here to the land of Turtle Island. You know, so there's actually a gigantic issue around grounding, about being, really finding your identity because you have a relationship to the earth here. And it's a really key issue around doing work in the world. And for us to really become oriented with this land and with ourselves and really be grounded in that energy. So it's a really big topic. The fourth element is the element of mineral or stone and bone, that's called Kusir in the Dogra cosmology. And that is one about knowing and memory, about our purpose, really finding, you know, why we're supposed to be here and what is it that we're supposed to be doing here. But it's about that listening and storytelling. The final the fifth element is nature, and that's called Wiye. That element is about authenticity, about magic, transformation, manifestation. And it's a very powerful energetic, which is very important to us right now because it is about transformation, about really pulling away the veils of what we think is happening and really hitting at who we are and what nature truly is, what our true nature is, and what the nature of the world outside of us is. So it's very instructive, this energy of Wiye, around really being clear about, you know, what's going on and to manifest the world that we're really looking to manifest.
And it's interesting how Wiye is the culmination of all of them put together.
Yeah, exactly.
And how the earth itself is our body in essence,
right,
with all of these elements that are working together and then expressing themselves in nature. Did I get that right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes. Nature is, in a sense, though we talk about vegetative nature as the really the holder of that energy, it is about the container of all things. You know, it is about, you know, holding water and stone and the earth itself, you know, that which comes, you know, that's part of nature, of course. But, you know, nature is based upon having the earth there in the first place. But it is the container for all these other energies, without a doubt, without a doubt. And that connection, what you've just said, is very key, again, when we talk about world care. When we talk about the energy of the earth in our bodies, we must understand that, again, we have to find healing and resonance with the earth itself. And there's a lot of talk around that or about that these days as we talk about climate change, which is a very key issue. Again, if we don't figure this one out, and even beyond climate change, if we don't understand our true relationship to the earth, we're really going to find ourselves marginalized energetically in the universe. And really, that's what's happening now because of the negative things that are going on due to capitalist globalization, colonialism, neocolonialism, the oppression of women. And I just like to say, you know, as go the women, so go the earth. As goes the earth, so go the women. And that doesn't mean that men don't go with them. But, you know, as we can see that, you know, there is this proliferation of the desecration of the feminine, it is not only happening to women as human beings. You know, there's this horrific record of rape and oppression that we're seeing in the world. But it finds, you know, unluckily, very unfortunate resonance in how we're treating the earth, too. We're doing the same things. You know, when you look at a strip mine or when we think about mountain topping, there are some, you know, really very scary metaphorical connections to how we treat women in modern society, and also what we're doing to the earth at this time. So, you know, we can't underestimate that connection, which really talks again about the real visceral connection that we have with these energies, with these spiritual entities in the world.
Yes, and I think that's absolutely bang on. The way we treat the earth and the way we treat each other, women, mm-hmm. even the way we treat ourselves.
Right.
And
right.
we had somebody rang in. I want to acknowledge Tim, and we're not taking callers tonight, but I want mm-hmm. to acknowledge Tim because he made a good point, and he was mm-hmm. commenting on how our body awareness can lead to better health. And in the context of where we're at in this conversation, I think right. it's a direct connection between how we know our bodies and right. what our bodies are saying, and
right.
then how that is reflecting in the earth itself. And there's this great challenge, opportunity for healing the connection itself mm-hmm. between ourselves, our bodies, our health, and the health of the entire planet, and ultimately our connection back into the universe body as a whole humanity. So
right.
That's the beauty of indigenous teachings,
mm-hmm.
and the indigenous teachings are, I love the phrase, a spiritual technology, a simple,
yep.
well, it's not simple, because we are not simple,
right.
you know,
right.
we're definitely not superficial mm-hmm. little beings that run around, and we were born to be slaves, and we only
right.
care about, you know, having sex, and eating more,
right.
and watching TV, and drinking beer. I
right.
mean, a lot of people behave like that, but the truth is, in
right.
our heart, we know more than that.
Right.
So
exactly.
these indigenous
right.
teachings offer us a vehicle to begin to explore and fall in love with our complexity, and then
exactly.
ideally bring that into the world of our everyday life, you know?
Right. Right. Without a doubt. And would you tell me his name again?
Tim.
Yes, Tim. Thank you. And I wanted to thank Tim for that, because it's a very key element in our understanding of the world, is understanding our place in it, so that we understand when we have that balance in our bodies, we know more information about the world. When we are about creating balance in the world, we will ultimately understand more about our bodies. Because in the indigenous point of view, and I want to remind everybody that everyone on this earth is the descendant of indigenous people. And part of our problem is that we have forgotten that, and we've forgotten how to be in that kind of a relationship, not only with the earth, but with our own bodies and with each other. So really coming into that awareness of our own bodies and those things, and, you know, nutrition and this whole concept of, you know, what do we let in, and in a sense, what comes out the other end? You know, that's something that we don't like to talk about. You know, you know, we can, you know, tell our health, you know, by what comes out the other end. And part of that is an integration of all the systems, not only of the body, but of the earth itself, and really being in resonance with what keeps it all flowing. And you know, to really understand that and to face it clearly, which is, again, part of the gift of Wiye, part of the gift of the spirit of nature, for us to really be clear about this and to see our complexity. If there's anything that's complex in this world, it is the energy of nature, because there's no one in and of themselves who can, you know, come into this world and say, well, I can truly understand all of the calculations that, you know, that creation has made around how many ants there should be over here, and all, you know, how many trees there should be there. You know, it is the ultimate complexity, but out of that comes the order that we live in, you know, the order that we depend upon, and the order that says these are the foods we should eat. This is the way we should treat the earth when we take food from it or when we grow food in it, and how we should respond to negative things that are in our societies and that are in our cultures, whether it be, you know, the defiling and the disrespect of women and men, you know, and the feminine in men,
mm-hmm.
or if we're talking about the earth itself and mountain topping or pollution and different elements that we're dealing with right now. and that are completely in our face. So we have to be honest with all of those things.
I agree, and I think that it's very important to be very conscious and communicate clearly that the desecration of women is the desecration of men. It's the desecration of humanity, the woman entity representing the divine feminine that lives in every human being. It is not a genital assignment reality. It is something that is in every single being. Then to whatever degree we're playing a part in that, and men are raped too, you know, the holistic conversation of our humanity is I think very important to keep in the conscious focus of the world we want to create, you know, the world of balance and, you know, moving away from this idea that the male and the female are different species. I mean, men are not from Mars and women are not from Venus. I'm sorry, folks. Right. We are all human beings. We are all born here on planet Earth for this learning. And that is one of the major separations that we all can do something about.
Exactly.
In our consciousness, we can work on that one, you know?
Exactly. And what you're bringing up is the concept of community. And that's ultimately important when we talk about if we can use the term healing the world. And when, you know, when I say healing the world, what really we're doing is we're healing the human relationship with the world. Because zebras never stopped being zebras. Turkeys never stopped being turkeys. Trees never stopped being trees. And living in balance the way that they're supposed to. It's humans that have largely gone out of balance with really being humans, and our best model for that is the indigenous way of being. And no, that doesn't mean we all need to live in teepees or logans or yurts, if you will, but that we are called to be in this familial relationship with Earth, this familial, informed, intimate relationship with nature that was part of our human development throughout time. And I'm always, you know, interestingly enough, you know, I as in my research around these issues and things like that, I look at people talk about indigenous society, and we always say, you know, oh yeah, for thousands of years we've been doing this. What do you mean thousands? We've been here, you know, in different formations, you know, for millions of years. And it's just science that, you know, relatively recently figured out that it was 3 million years. Who's to say it wasn't longer than that? You know, we're continually limiting ourselves and kind of half-stepping statements that really talk about the power of humanity on this earth, and that it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. And that's really what we're here to talk about, is to talk about how to really change that relationship, the dynamic of being human here on earth and being human with other people. Because if we don't do that, then we're not even learning from the ant. We're not learning from from the bees who actually were killing too. We're not learning from, you know, schools of fishes and flocks of birds how to relate with each other. And that's one of the things that the indigenous reality and also these spiritual technologies call us to do, is to really learn how to be with each other. And when we understand how these elements work together and the balance of these different energies within us and without us, we really come to a great way of thinking and a great paradigm to help us to manage all of the problems and all of the strengths that we have. And it gives us a really great, if you will, a great riverbed that the, you know, the flow of humanity can course its way back home with and to the ultimate resting place of spirit. So there's a lot of important things here for us to consider.
This is a really good segue to our relationship with humanity in the conversation of our ancestors and the ones who have gone before. And in the water gratitude ceremony that you offered us this week past, it really was a new concept in a way for me to think about an ancestor again, because we're healing our relationship with each other and with the planet. And whatever our history as a human species has been on this planet, we have our time now to move forward. And ancestors and our connection to our past has right. been all but obliterated. And right. I think in America, it's pretty easy to see what we do with our elders is we put them in institutions and forget about them. And right. and it goes even deeper in that, you know, the Alzheimer's and the forgetting things, you know, right. if we do not value their story,
right.
why would they want to remember it? I think there's just so many connections there. And so right. would you please tell us about ancestors and how yeah. they relate to our human story and the continuity, what they have to offer us and how, as newbies, you know, it's okay that we're right. just beginning this, you
right.
know,
exactly.
but let's get off on the right foot here.
Right. Without a doubt, you know, and it is true when people say, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Because we have so many examples, and you know, personal examples and situations that I've heard of, when we don't connect with the ancestors, when we don't connect with spirit, spirit and the ancestors say, they don't need us. We don't need to put our energy here. But in a way, you know, so, you know, spiritual energy can retract. And that's one of the things that we've found happening in the earth. And we've found, to some degree, happening with the ancestors, you know, that they can only go where, in to some degree, where they're wanted, but they've been knocking on our door for a long time. You know, one of the realities that we deal with when doing this spiritual work is sometimes when we open up connections to the ancestors, they're kind of jamming up the doorway because they're like, oh, my goodness, there's an opening here. You know, to this continuum. And when you said continuity, it's a really important word for us to understand around the ancestors. I call it the ancestral continuum. And when I say that, I talk about not just the place where the ancestors are in the spiritual realm or the other world, but that we are part of the ancestral continuum. Because our elders, who, like you're saying, and is very true, in modern society, we marginalize them, and we warehouse them in rest homes or nursing homes, and we have whole industries about taking our elders out of the community and sending them someplace. These are the people that have the wisdom of our lifetime, and they are the ones that are next in line to be our ancestors. Our ancestors are people who have passed on that we have known, and that actually on the other side, they're looking to stay in relationship with us. Because they are part of that ancestral continuum. When we make a deal on the other side, we come into this world as children, and it's our job to support these children who are coming from the ancestral plane to do the work to continue the balance, the cycle of balance and healing and love that this is all about in the first place. So, you know, the term continuity and continuum is really key here. And so we do need to look at the ancestors, because as they go to the other side, they still need to be connected to us. And we've heard tons of stories about spiritual entities who are still in homes, still in houses, still in parking lots even, or in forests or things like that. They're there because that may have been the last point of possibly the tragedy of their death, or it might have been the home in which they've lived. It may have been, you know, an area that was just familiar to them. And actually, you know, and we've all seen these photographs that have orbs in them, things like that, these you know, little spots of light. These are all indications of ancestral connection. Sometimes we can have things that happen in our life, in our just day-to-day life, and it's like, wait a minute, how did I get there? Or how come, you know, I felt this energy when I said a certain thing? Or how come when I touched this person's items, I felt a different way, or I felt, you know, grief, or I felt, even though I never knew Uncle Frank, you know, or something like that, it's because Uncle Frank is knocking at the door from the other side and is saying, I need a connection. We need to be in balance together. So part of these spiritual technologies are using indigenous ways of relating with the ancestors, doing ritual that actually, as we call it again, an ancestralization that sends them powerfully to the other side so they're not stuck between worlds, so that they can be of service to us, and so that we can be of service to them. Because part of this understanding is that the indigenous consciousness is that when the dead leave us, they're not really going anywhere. They are on the other side, but we keep them close. So many cultures feed their ancestors daily at every meal. Some food is put out for them to give them energy to recognize their being, and recognize their place in our world. So there are many, many ways to connect with them, but this relationship has to be opened up. Our ancestors are the ones that are connected to the deepest wisdom of the spirit world, to the deepest wisdom of all of the challenges that we've ever had. Let's talk about racism and slavery and sexism and the Inquisition, if you will, you know, that terrorized women, you know, all around Europe, things like that, that were breaking down the core structures of indigenous human society as, you know, women as healers and guiders of and holders of culture. You know, we broke that down through the Inquisition and we allowed that, and now we tell jokes about it. You've got to be crazy. But it's our ancestors who have seen that. They've had this experience. They still love us. They still want us to be connected to them. So any time that we can say their names, pour libation for them in the African tradition, whatever we're drinking, even throw some food outside and say, yes, we remember you. Yes, we want you around. Keep pictures of them, all the people who have passed on. Keep pictures of them around. Make them, you know, make it familiar, things that they owned. Keep them close. You know, rings they might have had or whatever it might be, books they like to read, a certain kind of beer they like to drink. Keep buying it. Let them know that we have a relationship. Talk to them. Ask them for help. But, you know, enter into these relationships, and particularly in the indigenous societies, find out about these rituals and processes by which, you know, and grief is always a part of them. You know, we say in the Dogra tradition that grief is really the food and the sustenance of the ancestors. They really get us on an emotional level. Sometimes it's just more important to be straight and honest and grittily down and dirty honest with them rather than, well, you know, Uncle Frank, I would really like you to do this. If you're not feeling it, they're not feeling it. You know, they get that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in the place of feeling. You know, they're in the place of flow and energy. You know, we're the ones out here just trying to make, you know, trying to figure it out. But they have this clarity, and we can help them do that better if we have a really open and honest relationship with them. And if we, you know, engage the things that are difficult for us, you know, I was just talking about that with some of the people from my community, you know, some very powerful women. We were talking about how many people sometimes stop their own development because they're not ready to deal with the issues that their ancestors created for them. You know, and it might have been a situation of incest or rape or even that, you know, your ancestors were part of the slave trade in any way, shape, or form. You know, there are many Africans who are ashamed that their ancestors were enslaved, even though we're still enslaved because we haven't dealt with it, you know, or that they've been part of creating slavery. And it's like, well, I can't look at that. But looking at it and getting through it and having the grief and the emotion that is connected to it is our liberation. Is the thing that says, yes, we lived as bravely and courageously as we could on this earth, and we deserve then, when we're done on this earth, to go into the ancestral, you know, continuum on the other side and be held by our community, you know, because we help to sustain these traditions. So it, you know, we can really understand how, you know, one feeds the other, and that we're partners in this thing called life and death. And in that sense, you know, death is not a thing to fear. It's a thing to understand that's just a part of life. And that way when we go to the other side, we're held in just the same way, in the same love and compassion that we would be by the loved ones that we have here on earth.
Yeah, the near-death experiencers are tremendous wealth of information about that and in a brief and brevity. But also, as you were talking, one of the things that was first challenging for me when the word ancestors, I heard that was my closest ancestor is my mother, Juliet Nightingale, who recently passed away. She left on 28 February 2009. Yeah. And she's actually the ancestor that handed me this radio program. She is the beautiful one who had she had a show on here before, Toward the Light. Her archives are still with us. She introduced me to Don, God bless him. And so I am sitting here in the seat that my ancestor left me. And once I realized that ancestors aren't dead, then I was cool because, you know, my mother never died. She never died. And she's actually so much more alive than she's ever been. And in the grieving process, I feel like what you're saying is really important. One thing I noticed when I was doing the whole dance of her physical demise was the way everything is so rushed, you know? I marveled. I thought, well, who the heck can actually write an obituary for somebody that died 3 days ago with any soul?
Right.
You know, and now it's like coming 2 years, and now I feel like I could write a really good obituary. In fact, that's one of my little personal challenges. But the grieving and the whole process of the send-off is a place perhaps, you know, to create a new world with our ancestors is a place that we can practice.
The only way we can create a new world is with our ancestors, because they're the ones that got us to this place in the world in the first place, you know. And even science will tell you that energy, you know, is never dissipated, or, you know, it never goes away, if you will. It's never extinguished. It just transforms. So even if we apply this to, you know, the indigenous concepts, we understand that our ancestors are still energy, you know, and that's exactly what they go through. They go to this place of a different energy, a different way of being. And we must stay connected with them, you know, because they're connected with us and they're asking for this connection. So gigantic love and shout out to Juliet Nightingale for this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it's a great, you know, example of just what she did on this earth, but she's completely there. You know, I wouldn't imagine that she's not listening, attentive, and helping us at this time now. You know, she may have just linked up a couple of, you know, cables that fell down somewhere in the woods somewhere, and she might have, you know, put them back together for us, you know, when the limb fell on him, just to make sure that the broadcast kept going through. But this is just an example, you know, a metaphorical, you know, to some degree, about that they're just that close. They are literally just that close. And in the Dogra tradition, you know, we understand, and part of the fear falls away, if not all of the fear, when we understand that going into the spirit world as they do when they die, they come to a place of clarity that allows them to help us with some of the negative things that they might have done to us, or that they might have helped create in this world. So it brings a whole new realm of understanding and connection to a person who might have hurt us really badly in our life, that we understand once they get to the other side, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, they're actually even more ready to help us because they see it. They see what they have done. They see what they've created. And they're like, again, they may be knocking on our door even harder because they are moved by that energy that they created here, and they see our suffering, they feel our suffering. So they want to come through that portal, you know, again, which is helped in the, you know, through the element of fire, and to really connect with us and help us to do the things that we need to do so that, again, together we bring balance into the world. And that's really what's important in this sense is to connect with them. And keep that alive. Another element of this is that, as you say, you know, it felt really rushed for you. In the Dogra tradition, a funeral may take 7 days. It could take a couple weeks. But it's definitely not something that, well, let me write a little eulogy, and then we're going to be done in 3 days, and then we're going to bury the person in a metal, almost airtight coffin, and then put them in a vault in the ground so they can't even get back to the earth? No, that doesn't make sense, you know. And it's not to say that, you know, in the indigenous people, I would say even have a very much more balanced sense of love and death and life, things like that, as connected to the dying and to the dead, because we understand that we do need to return to the earth. We do need to energetically be given back to the mother that gave us birth, to the mother and father energy that gave us birth. It is our final gift to this world, this energy. And of course, hopefully, if we've lived a good life, our legacy lives on in the people that we've touched. But it doesn't stop. We are still an energetic reality that is there to help the people that are still here on earth. So when we face up to the challenges of what we feel about our ancestors, what we know about them, what they created in the world, positive or negative, we can really get through that veil that's really holding back a lot of us. And when you think about it, think about the numbers of people who have learned not to connect with their ancestors. You can understand the tremendous tsunami of energy that can be opened up when we really connect to them and we really start to knock on that door in the other direction, or just simply open it and say, I see you, I feel you, and really be about that energetic of being in true connection with all the energies of the universe, of which humans are part of. We're part of that.
We absolutely are. Mm-hmm. And I want to point out that in that communion with them after they leave, and I just want to validate how true that has been for myself, in that not only has my mother been able to help me understand different experiences that we experienced together, but she helped me understand better her story and the story that she was carrying. And you know, in that whole process of learning respect for her as a human, having her process has been so healing for me. It's allowed me to be human and become much more focused about the quality of my life, because I'm realizing as a result of my communion, continuing communion with her, that I do make a difference, you know. Every single thought makes a difference. And so the ancestors, while they need to be acknowledged in their new form, in their new spirit, it's equally healing to acknowledge the death of that whole life and where it ended, so that we can truly end and truly begin. Because the conversation of omitting death from our whole reality, which is a lot, we can, you know, give a little, religion has a lot to do with that, you know, the packaging and selling of spirit and the whole box thing, you know, put it away, forget about it. It translates to our own ignorance of our own inner world, in my opinion. And then when you can't access your own inner world, you're really lost.
Exactly. And it comes down to the saying, you know, as above, so below, as within, so without. You know, when we see, you know, tension outside, we have to understand how that creates tension inside. You know, and as we have tension inside, we have to see how that comes to, you know, manifest itself outside of us. So again, you know, true healing and if you will, true freedom from pain through true freedom from stress only comes after we really understand the relationship of what's happening inside and outside of us. So that can't be misunderstood or underestimated, that the necessity to really go within and see what's going on in there. And again, to look at that, you know, relationship with the ancestors and say, wait a minute, what was that about? You know, and how can they help me now? Oh, my goodness. They are the ones that are, you know, again, knowing about my life. You know, they're hopefully intimately related with us, but they can be even deeper, in a much deeper way, internal way, be related to us and help us in ways that we never could have imagined. It's a very, very powerful dynamic.
Absolutely. And they bring us into the spirit world itself. And now I have a personal guide in the spirit world who literally has taken me some amazing places. It's such a delight to have a friend on the other side to show me around. It's really cool. It's really a great compliment to my whole being from the inside out. And the whole conversation about facing our ancestors or facing the things in our world, the whole energy of fear of death, I think they're intertwined somehow.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
You know, not being able to look at the way that the earth has been defiled. It reflects in not being able to look at how our relationships have been challenged, the lessons. And we have sort of this challenge in looking at the stuff that doesn't resonate in the moment. We don't want to look at stuff we don't want to look at. We just want to look at, I don't know what, TV. I don't know. But how in the
Dogra
escapism. Yeah. We'd just rather do something to numb ourselves, pacify our mind, quiet things into oblivion, and then we're also in that process, though, I think unconsciously, oftentimes we're putting our own feelings into oblivion.
Right.
And I wonder, in the Dogara tradition, how there's a teaching that helps us face the darkness and integrate the darkness and the light within us, and
right.
to help us be more effective in the world.
Right, right. Well, one of those things is, one of the larger elements is ritual, of course. When we enter into sacred space and we invoke the ancestors to protect us and be with us and guide us, or we invoke one or more of the elemental spirits, one of the spirits of nature, to be in relationship to us and to give us the healing that we can't even imagine. It's one of the things that is part of the keeping us in balance, keeping us attuned to our inner selves and our outer communal and social selves and our relationship to the world. So part of that connection to ritual is going into grief ritual, which is ultimately a nature ritual where we hand over our deepest griefs to nature, and we give them to spirit, to ask spirit actually to take the things that we can't take anymore. And in part of that ritual, and water enters into that too, because that is the element of feeling and emotion and grief. But during those rituals, we are called upon, and in a sense, it is our sacred duty, our communal and personal duty, to come to a place of deep, deep grief, to pull up from, if you will, our bowels and from our gut, from our toes, all of the grief and the emotion that is being held inside of us. Sometimes when we have a backache or a certain kind of organ disease or something like that, it's in a sense metastasized grief. And even some of the allopathic doctors will tell you that, you know, if they have the awareness to do so. But oftentimes we're holding grief, and we go to places of depression or anger. But these grief rituals can be ultimately liberating, of course, and get us further down the line to healing and help us to hold it in a communal way, because most of these rituals, if not all of them, we're doing in communal ways. And that could mean 5 people, or it could be 20 or 30 or 40 people. But where we're in relationship with each other, and we've asked spirit, and we're using the spiritual technologies to protect us in different ways. There's certain protocols and how to set up a ritual, but that we're doing this in a communal way so that we have the support, and that there are people there to literally give us support and to literally hold us, to hand us a tissue if we need it, or to cry with us. That's one of the unbelievable roles that women have played throughout history. Is to be the ones that are the mourners, to be the ones that are with us during grief rituals. Let's just start crying. They're connected to that. Part of their energy is to do that, and it doesn't mean men can't, because that's part of us too. But women, you know, are here, and they can help us to do that, because they can more easily access that energy. And so that they've been holding that for us. When we've oppressed them, we've taken them from their power source, you know, from their connection to that element or to that emotion. And so we all metastasize when we don't allow women to be who they are. So that's part of the, if you will, the social technology of being able to hold people that have these feelings of grief that are very scary for some people. It's like, oh my God, I'm just going to explode if I let any of it out. So we hold it in. And ultimately we die with it. You know, it kills us. But that's not what community is about, allowing that to happen. We want to see it in each other. We want to hold each other. We want to be compassionate with each other, to help each other to let go of the things that we don't need anymore, and to help us through these challenges.
That's a really good example of balancing fire and water, taking initiative to accessing spirit and being in integrity with their emotion, and in welcoming our emotional body with ourselves and with each other. That is a great, great example of balancing fire and water.
Yeah.
We're getting kind of close. I wonder if you'd like to offer a story. The indigenous traditions are very well known for telling stories of life in nature and mm-hmm. serve as tremendous examples, as you've right. mentioned. And right. so I wonder if you'd like to offer us a story that might allow us to enjoy that part of the indigenous tradition and close.
Yes,
we have about 10 minutes.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's one in particular that I think is really key for us, and it comes out of a group of people from South America. I'm a little remiss to say it because I don't want to make a mistake on where the source is, but a South American indigenous group had, and actually others also, you know, this is not the only group that said it, but more famously the South American group communicated the condor and the eagle prophecy through which, and I'll paraphrase it and summarize it, that in a sense, the indigenous cultures of the South, represented by the condor, must come into unity with the eagle consciousness of the North, and by that they mean the more intellectualized modern society that we've created or that has been created here in North America. That the condor and eagle have to learn how to fly the same skies together, that there has to be a balance now between the heart-centered condor consciousness and the mind-centered eagle consciousness. Both powerful birds, both beautiful birds, but that there has to be a connection between these two, or else that this earth is going to come, and our place on the earth more particularly, our human place on the earth is going to be jeopardized to a very high degree. So really, these people in South America who call us their little brothers, and actually we're acting that way. We're acting like those kind of punkish little brothers who are kind of messing up the joint and things like that. We're not, you know, listening to the rules, you know, that earth has laid down for us, you know, these guidelines. And they've really given us almost, if you will, the final call to say that, you know, this is yet another wake-up call that you're being handed so that you can understand the necessity to get in touch with those heart centers, get in touch with those concepts of compassion. And when we do that, we come to a place of really understanding what we're doing in the world and how we're doing it in the world, and that needs to change. So, you know, when we look at a copper mine or a coal mine, we feel it in a different way. We don't just think, oh, well, this could produce a certain amount of billions of dollars of revenues. We feel that there's something going on, that there's a negative relationship that's going to, of course, be created with the indigenous people there because that's their home. And all of these initiatives, these mining initiatives, invariably displace and disorganize, disintegrate indigenous culture and reality. But on the other side, it creates that same kind of disconnection within humans. So, I mean, the story that I'm giving out, you know, this condor and eagle, if you will, may not be as eloquent as many of the stories that the indigenous people hold, and there are, you know, millions of stories that come out of the indigenous reality. But I think it's one of the key ones that we have to have. So that we can really unlock this level of learning and growing and feeling in this world that is really necessary. And when we understand that modern society has, you know, like you talked about in the funeral situation with your mother, we've been pushed by this fire energy beyond even being observant or being patient or being present with what the processes are that we've been asked to get into. You know, we're, you know, we make decisions about our jobs or our home or our family, and we're like, oh, my goodness, why did I do that? Or we're not even conscious that we, you know, that we're creating tension. So this condor and eagle prophecy is very deep, you know, when we really think about what that means, and that we have to come to a place where we're understanding what this indigenous message is, and that, you know, our indigenous brothers and sisters, those who relate to the earth in a harmonious way, are really calling us to honesty, are really calling us to responsibility, and are really calling us to humility in this world. And it's a very important story that we have to listen to. We have to be able to talk about that story. Avatar, maybe we can throw out, but the eagle and the condor story, you know, the condor and the eagle story is one that we really have to listen to, and it may not have so many special effects to it, but the effect that comes through our understanding of it and our living like we got the message is going to be amazing. I can see it, you know. I can feel that. I can feel what's on the other side of those two birds flying in the sky together. And we can look at that as a global reality. It's not just South America and North America, because these concepts, you know, can be universalized in their general nature. We can look at, oh, my goodness, where has capitalism gone throughout the world? And even the capitalist organization will talk about North and South, you know, because they get that. You know, Africa is just south of Europe, and Europe is the one that colonized Africa, if you will, best or worst or first. So, you know, we have to look at these messages that are coming out in these stories. They're really indicative of things that are important for us that we need to take care of.
Can you offer some of the attributes of condor that are heart-centered? Why would the condor be the heart carrier, and why would the eagle be the intellect carrier? What are some real-life, you know, things about condor that bring us into the heart center that we might have gleaned in observation if we were living in harmony with nature and had that opportunity?
Well, I'll speak to some generalities around just their, at least their metaphorical connection to the peoples that they're talking about that are being referenced here. And there's a lot to be pulled just from that general reference in that, you know, the condor is one of the, if not the largest bird in the world, largest bird there in the Andes. And we also have it here in the United States or in Turtle Island, but realize that we just about killed it, you know, we just about killed the condor. But one of the things that I think leads us into this consciousness of the heart center is that, you know, what does the condor do? The condor is the animal that comes down to see the things that have died, you know, and literally plunges its head into the depth of the core of that death. In a sense, if you will, the connection to grief. Part of the energetic of the condor also, as signified by the white ring of feathers around its neck, is the bridge between the other world and this world. That energy can help us to unify these things, which is ultimately, again, a heart connection. You know, if we don't have the heart connected, then we don't have the flow. We don't have that unity with the other side. So in that sense, you know, there is definitely that heart connection. One of the things about eagle and the intellectuality, again, is the connection of the eagle to North America and to capitalism. And globalization, the corporatocracy, as John Perkins calls it, and I think he calls it that well. But the eagle is a very high flying animal that the indigenous people here in Turtle Island have said, you know, flies the highest, closest to spirit. But also one of the energies of it is about its ability to see, and so that there's this concept possibly of its being able to intellectualize, you know, what it sees. We can also come to a full, you know, kind of a fuller concept of that connection to spirit with eagle also. But again, in this prophecy, you know, there, you know, I would go back to these generalities, you know, and I'll have to say in my ignorance of the deeper meanings of what these people have come with, you know, I don't know what they saw directly in their prophecy or in their dream, but I think we can call, you know, upon the metaphorical nature of the connection to these people. But there are things that we can, you know, look at, you know, that also, you know, kind of talk to that intellectualism and also to that heart center that comes from the condor.
Thank you. And I think that we're wrapping it up, and that is a really powerful note to leave it on, to dream. To really take the image of the condor, take the image of the eagle, pull it up on the internet, get a picture going on, and dream with it. Go into a meditative state in a quiet place and dream with that. And how does that feel to us? And what does that represent to us? Because though you may be ignorant, as you said, of the people who have started the story, if you will, you are definitely not ignorant of your own interpretation and what it means to you. And the meaning, The meaning is what we're after. When it means something to us, we are motivated then to create the best that we can possibly do. So, wow. Thank you so much, Ukumbwa. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. Thank you, BBS, and the good people in the back. And thank you, Juliet Nightingale. Thank you. And she's so here. My God. And well, this is a little bit of a surprise for me, but I'm welcoming it. And we will see you all in 2 weeks. My guest will be Aaron McCollum. We'll be actually exploring humanity from a new perspective. I'll let you all know about that closer to time. And thank you again. And thank you to all the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed and found some value in this. And I wish you all the best. Take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jamil.